We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Time to wake up. It's 5, and we're live.
Oh, is this thing on? I don't care. I want him to hear.
This is the pregame show, your early morning shot of sports on 95.7, The Game. Come on.
I'm sore. My entire body is sore. My legs, my back, my neck. It's all sore. People, I have some advice. If you plan on going ATVing for your first time and you do it at Pismo Beach, I highly recommend it, for one. But also, make sure you're at least a little bit in shape before you do that because you will be in pain. And my currently, my entire left side, it's unstable. I don't really know how to control it right now. I can't help but limp on my left side. Nevertheless, highly recommend Pismo Beach. Do some ATVing. Good morning, everybody. Stephen Langford in on the pregame show. Of course, we are the pregame to 95.7 The Game. There's no actual sport going on right now. However, we do have some things to talk about this morning. Got a couple of things. One, this happened on Friday, so it's a little delayed. But I do want to talk a little bit about the Draymond and Charles Barkley beef, which continues to escalate and only gets funnier. And I have some thoughts about what Draymond said. We'll get to that in a little bit. We're going to take a look a little bit going on at the what's going on with the playoffs right now in the NBA and which matchup you would like to see if the season were to end today. Because as it stands, we got some teams that are looking pretty solidified at this point in the season, because at the 8th seed, you got the Orlando Magic, and then at the 9th seed, you got the Washington Wizards, who are 5.5 games back. I don't see the Wizards catching up to that 8th seed. And then you got the Pelicans 4 games back of the Grizzlies of that 8th seed in the Western Conference. So right now, it looks like the playoff teams 1 through 8 are looking pretty stable, but again, they could change within the last few games of the season. It's a lot for them to come back, but it looks like these teams 1 through 8 are going to be in the playoffs, so I want to take a look at that. I got a fun little hypothetical for you that I found from over the weekend on Twitter, and I watched the responses, and it was fun to watch the response, so I wanted to bring that to the show. But of course, the Warriors, they got the win on Saturday over the Sixers, and it was a strange pregame thing because you were expecting Steph to play. That was the what was expected. You know, when Steph played in that first game, you're thinking you can't wait for him to play on Saturday, just waiting a couple of days. And then early on Saturday, you get the news that Steph Curry has the flu, and the Warriors put out a statement stating that it is not COVID-19, a.k.a. coronavirus, and I just found that one just as a sign of the times that we're in right now, and it was pretty crazy. You know, I don't really have much of a take on that because there is no take I don't think you can really have on it. I just do think that right now, in this time that we're living, it is pretty crazy that we're getting statements, because I really did think that when, you know, I read Steph Curry was sick, the first thing that did come to my mind was this epidemic that's going on right now with COVID-19, a.k.a. coronavirus. So the fact that he sent out a statement That was pretty – I was interested in that. And then also, I mean, just these LeBron saying that he wouldn't show up if there were no fans in the arena, should they play without fans and they feel like they have to block fans from coming to these games. I mean, all these festivals are getting canceled. Everything that involves large crowds are getting canceled. And obviously they canceled sporting events for fans in Italy. So now they're just playing without a crowd in the arena. But LeBron saying he wouldn't play if that were to happen. So there's going to be a lot more to react to, obviously, down the line. But for right now, we do need to enjoy these games that we can actually go to, as the Warriors did get the win over the Sixers. Here is Steve Kerr after the game talking about the win.
What did you think of your team's defense tonight, especially in the fourth quarter, holding the Sixers to 24 points and making sure they never retook the lead at the finish?
Yeah, it took until the fourth quarter to really get much traction defensively. I thought Philadelphia did a good job beating us inside for the first three quarters. You know, Harris and Horford were really hurting us, and but our guys hung in there and kept the game close, and then fourth quarter really turned up the defense, and we got a lot of great individual performances, too.
With Damian's game a couple of nights ago and the finish that he had, how rewarding was it for you to see him, you know, make clutch plays down the stretch tonight?
Yeah, I mean, it's not surprising. You know, Damian has so much toughness and perseverance. You think about how he's gotten this far, something like that the other night, a tough finish. If you play in the NBA long enough, stuff happens like that. And so he bounced back quickly. He had a great game the other night, too. You know, he played really well the whole night through, just had a couple tough plays at the end. But, you know, one of the things I love about this team is just seeing the stories of these guys. You know, Mike Mulder coming kind of out of nowhere and playing the way he's playing. You know, Juan contributing the way he's contributing. A lot of guys who just have persevered and fought for everything that they've earned here, and they're doing a great job and earning everything.
What do you think of Michael Mulder's poise, a 10-day guy being on the line twice at the end of the game to help ice it with those free throws?
Yeah, and hitting a big three, too, with under 2 minutes left to put us ahead. So Mike is fantastic, really good player, good defensively as well, and we're lucky to have him. So anxious to – I know this was the final day of his 10-day, but we're anxious to get him back some way. So I'm sure that's going to happen.
This is, I think, the fifth game that you're bringing Pascal off the bench, even with some of the injuries, and he's an efficient scorer off the bench. Is that a role that you like for him going forward next season?
For Eric?
For Pascal.
Yeah.
Eric Pascal.
I don't know. You know, next season's next season, so we'll see. You know, next year in training camp, we'll figure all that out. But this year, the way our team is constructed right now, I really like him off the bench, and I liked keeping either Andrew or Eric on the floor at all times, just so we have somebody we can play through.
How is he playing back here? Is he playing his best basketball season? He had that really big Eric. He had that really big surge early, and then seemed to kind of hit the wall. I mean, like, is he a better player than even when he broke out early in the season?
Eric?
Yeah.
Yeah, much better player. Much more aware, much more poised. Six assists tonight, eight the other night. The pump fake to draw two free throws with under a minute to play, that's a veteran play right there, to show that kind of poise and confidence. I just think he's made the game easier for himself by just moving the ball when he's covered. So he's understanding when to attack and when to move the ball on, and that's a big step.
Marquese Chriss had eight assists tonight. I would imagine that's close to his career high, if not his career high. What do you make of him as a passer? Is it his game developing? Is it guys moving off the ball when he's running offense through him in the post, or is it just his vision?
It's one of the first things we noticed in training camp, which really surprised me, was his ability in the in the high post when he would catch the ball. He's really good with the dribble handoff stuff, and we've always had a guy in that role. You know, whether it was Andrew Bogut or David Lee or Draymond Green. You need a good passer in that spot, given the shooting that we have and the way we like to play. So Marquise showed that ability right away, which was one of the reasons we wanted to keep him, and he's gotten better and better with that during the season.
Still with Marquise, he's been getting switched onto guards pretty routinely on defense. What do you you've seen from him in those situations as far as
he's gotten better. You know, early in the season he was lunging at guards and letting them get angles against him. I think he's done a better job of finding the right angle and keeping guys in front and forcing difficult shots over the top.
So a couple of guys that he mentioned there. One at the end, obviously, was Marquese Chriss playing defense. And Marquese Chriss was the first guy I looked at when Andrew Wiggins came to this team. And the first three games, Marquese Chriss, during Wiggins' tenure with the Warriors, in those three games, was having a 20-10 season for those three games in the season. But Eric Paschal, now looking at him, it has been quite a few games, obviously, since Andrew Wiggins has arrived, and they've played the Lakers twice so far in that span. And since that second game against the Lakers, which was at the end of the month, he's been going 21 with 5 assists and 4 rebounds. 21, 5, and 4. And that's just as a 6-man off the bench. If there are any two players who are solidifying themselves as rotation guys, constant rotation guys for Steve Kerr, it's going to be Eric Paschal and it's going to be Marquese Chriss. These two have done, I already think, enough this season to the point where they're going to give him a chance on this team next year. There are a lot of guys which we really don't know about. Damian Lee having the big game, I think that's going to be one of the big question marks. Jordan Poole, obviously they're not going to give up on him just after 1 year, so Jordan Poole is going to remain on the roster too, fighting for a spot next season. But Damian Lee, although they did extend him with that contract after obviously his 45 days of service were up, Damian Lee was the one they gave the contract to, and he is going to be the one who I'm going to be paying attention to as far as the rest of the season to see if he can maybe fit in with this team as a rotational piece. These last few games, you know, he's had good scoring numbers, but also he struggled in that first game with Steph back against the Raptors. And then in this game with the Sixers, he had another good one. And so it remains to be seen with what's to come with these guys. But the main thing over the weekend that people couldn't stop talking about, and this is what garnered the national headlines, was Draymond Green and Charles Barkley getting into a little beef. And this is what happened on Friday. But here's Charles Barkley earlier after that matchup against the Lakers talking about Draymond Green.
He had his normal triple single.
Golden State.
Why you on him so hard?
Right? He talk all that stuff when he got the other boys with him.
Golden State hanging in there against the Lakers, a 54-52 game. Don't encourage him.
Come on, wait. No, man. He talks all that stuff when he got them other boys with him. Got out there and fight for himself, he just don't want to play. Give me a break. Y'all better quit telling me who can play and who can't play. I know who can play.
And that was, of course, after Draymond got ejected. So that was during the first half of Inside the NBA. And Draymond Green speaking for the first time since then is talking about Charles Barkley.
Barkley should stop before I go take his job, though, so I can do that well, too. He already ain't make enough money playing, so he need that job. He should stop talking to me. I like to, you know, tendency to end people. So he should stop before I take his job. If he keep talking, then I'll take it sooner than he thinks. So, yeah, he probably should be quiet. He also can't talk basketball with me either. Not smart enough, not qualified. No rings, can't sit at this table.
Whose side are you on? Chilton Auto Body text line 95795. Are you on the Charles Barkley side of things? Do you think Draymond was way out of bounds with those comments? Or are you on Draymond Green's camp? Are you with Draymond in this situation? Chilton Auto Body text line 95795, 888-957-9570. We got a lot more to talk about here on the pregame show on 95.7 The Game.
Now back to the pregame show on 95.7 The Game. Here's Stephen Langford.
The pregame show is presented by Golden State Lumber. Three generations, 65 years of experience in 7 Bay Area locations. Give us the winning edge. When you succeed, we succeed. That's Golden State Lumber at goldenstatelumber.com. My body's sore. Ugh. Going ATVing on the Pismo Beach dunes when you don't stretch, not a good idea. I currently having trouble moving my back. When you hurt your back, you really learn that when you're doing everyday things, you learn which things you actually use your back for. When you're not sore, you don't really feel it. But then when you are sore, it turns out that you use every single muscle in your back to do every single thing to live your everyday life. So that's where I'm at right now. But I am interested in what's going on with Barkley versus Draymond. Good morning, everybody. Welcome into the pregame show. Joe Lowe and Dibs coming up at 6 o'clock. We, of course, had our Dream Job contest, our live event on Saturday, and we got our four finalists, and they will be doing another round of on-air festivities. And what's to come, they'll have more information for you on Joe Lowe and Dibs. But Charles Barkley and Draymond Green. Charles Barkley versus Warrior fans has been a thing ever since Steph Curry became a thing. Because as soon as the three-pointers started happening and they started knocking them down and getting successful with it, beating the bigger guys, that's when Charles Barkley started to come down hard on the Warriors. And ever since then, it's been back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And of course, him and Draymond have had little spats in the past, but nothing like this that we've seen recently. So Draymond got ejected from that Laker game within the first half with about, what was it, just over 5 minutes left in the second quarter. And Charles Barkley had to make his jokes during the halftime on Inside the NBA. Here is Charles Barkley talking about Draymond Green.
He had his normal triple single.
Golden State.
You know him so hard.
He talk all that stuff when he got the other boys with him.
Golden State hanging in there against the Lakers, a 54-52 game. Don't encourage him.
Come on, wait. No, man. He talks all that stuff when he got the other boys with him. Now he got out there and fight for himself. He just don't want to play. Give me a break. Y'all better quit telling me who can play and who can't play. I know who can play.
And here is Draymond's response to Charles Barkley.
Barkley should stop before I go take his job, though, so I can do that well, too. He already ain't make enough money playing, so he need that job. He should stop talking to me. I like to, you know, tendency to end people. So he should stop before I take his job. If he keep talking, then I'll take it soon, sooner than he thinks. So, yeah, he probably should be quiet. He also can't talk basketball with me either. Not smart enough, not qualified. No rings, can't sit at this table.
Whose side are you on? Chilton Autobody text line 95795. Are you with Draymond Green on this one, or are you with Charles Barkley? And from the 408 on the Chilton Autobody text line, you're sore because you're out of shape, dude, .. You're 100% right. I'm not going to dispute that. I am not going to dispute that. Had a breakfast burrito beforehand. Thought that was going to put me in some danger. It didn't. How about that? A couple hours before, I ate a breakfast burrito and then go on ATV. Figured that would be problematic. Turned out it wasn't. So if you do go ATVing and you're craving a breakfast burrito before you go, feel free to eat one. It's not going to cause you any problems on the dunes. You're fine. But yeah, you're 100% right. You are sore because you're out of shape. I tried to mask it by saying that I didn't stretch beforehand. That's a complete lie. I'm just out of shape. From the Chilton Autobody text line, though, at 95795, we're getting them rolling in, talking about Barkley and Draymond Green. And the reaction on Twitter when this went down was everyone coming at Draymond because he couldn't hang with Charles Barkley on the court. Barkley was a much better player than him, had much better skills. All Draymond has is rings. Draymond was with Steph and Clay, blah, 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 all that sort of stuff. So it was all coming down to them playing on the court. And here's my situation with it. Take that stuff away. I think they are just two completely different players. And how they impact their team, they're both completely different to me. Now, sure, of course, Charles Barkley was way more skilled and all that sort of stuff, way more athletic. I mean, he was basically he was basically like how they view Zion Williamson right now, except for, you know, the whole running and jumping as quick as Zion Williamson is, and Zion being 285 pounds at the height that he is. It wasn't anything like that, but as far as his explosiveness, for his size, the athleticism that Barkley had, as far as just getting up and down the court, going coast to coast, that's what made Charles Barkley so special. So they are completely different players to me when it comes to on-the-court stuff. But Draymond does have the rings to prove it. He does have that to say, so there is that for him. But the other thing I made from Draymond's comments is that he said that he could replace Barkley right now, and or sooner than you think. Not right now. I totally botched that. But sooner than you think is what Draymond Green said. Now, I don't know what that means necessarily. I don't know if that means that, you know, he's going to play out this contract, and as soon as that happens, he's going to go straight on inside the NBA. But here's my situation with Charles Barkley. I like him so much on inside in the NBA, and I like the dynamic between Ernie Johnson, Shaq, Kenny the Jet Smith, and Barkley. I don't think anyone should break that up anytime soon. I want that to be the sort of pre and post. I want that to be the staple for basketball forever. It's been on for a long time now. It's been on for a very long time. I want it to continue. I want it to be like Saturday Night Live, where it just doesn't go off the air, except you keep the same cast of characters until you can't anymore. I don't think Draymond can replace Barkley on that show. Barkley's way too valuable on that show. You know, you do go to learn here and there, but for the most part, you go there for entertainment. I think Draymond is going to be so good on TV when he's done playing. I think he's going to be so good. But that dynamic on inside the NBA, when Draymond says I could replace him and get him out of his job sooner than you think, I'm like, Barkley's just too entertaining. And by all accounts, is the nicest guy in the world. Like, you should hear him talking about tipping waiters and waitresses, tipping the bartenders, tipping people who are helping him out, who are giving him a service. Like, there's a lot of things that Barkley does off camera which are the nicest things in the world. He goes on and criticizes players, and people try and act like his personality is just mean, which it can be. He's had some things in the past for sure that have gotten him into some hot water, but in the end, he's a good-hearted dude. I just like inside the NBA so much. I immediately thought when I heard that soundbite, I didn't think of just Draymond versus Charles Barkley on the court. I thought of Draymond versus Charles Barkley on inside the NBA. And I like Charles Barkley on that show as much as anyone. From the 707, Draymond couldn't hold Barkley's jock strap. That's to be expected. Also from the 707, Draymond only has rings because of Steph and Clay. Draymond costs him a ring. From the 415, the hibernating bear that is Draymond and the Warriors. From the 415, Barkley keeps poking the bear, the hibernating bear that is Draymond and the Warriors. From the 925, if they both played each other in their prime, Charles Barkley would destroy Draymond Green. And from the 650, game ball to Pascal, Lee, Chris, and Mulder with the comeback win over the 76ers and ending the Chase losing streak. Yeah, shout out to them. We talked about it in the first segment. And Eric Pascal in the past six games is averaging 21-5-4. Five rebounds, four assists, and 21 points. 21.5 if you want to get super technical with it. But he's solidifying himself as a rotational piece. But right now, Draymond versus Barkley is the situation. And I find it interesting because normally anytime Charles Barkley criticizes the Warriors, has anything bad to say about him, especially during the championship run, no one is on Barkley's side. I think this is the first time that I've heard and seen Warrior fans come down Draymond's road on this one and tell him he should be quiet. But again, this isn't anything new. This is what Draymond does. And this is what's going to make him so good on TV later on. Listen to how well this criticism and this response was laid out. Like, when we look at Stephen A. Smith, a lot of times we focus too much on the analysis and don't appreciate the delivery of said analysis. That's what I think of Stephen A. Smith. And Draymond Green,
his criticism of Barkley. Listen to this.
Barkley should stop before I go take his job, though, so I can do that well, too. He already ain't make enough money playing, so he need that job. He should stop talking to me. I like to, you know, tendency to end people. So he should stop before I take his job. If he keep talking, then I'll take it soon, sooner than he thinks. So, yeah, he probably should be quiet. He also can't talk basketball with me either. Not smart enough, not qualified. No rings, can't sit at this table.
It's like, there's going to be something made about this. Like, there's got to be some sort of, I mean, there's going to be a t-shirt probably, a segment with Draymond and with his future in television broadcast and whatever he wants to do. He can go down whatever avenue he wants, but this is the precursor for the TV gigs. This is what the NBA players, NFL players too, baseball players, whoever. A lot of the former players who are turned analysts always did this with the media. They were always very well-spoken, had things to say, controversies to say, rather than just Draymond saying, no, I don't pay attention to that outside stuff. I just focus with what's on. I don't pay attention to any of that. I don't pay attention to that. That's just a political answer. Everyone pays attention. I truly believe that. Unless, of course, you're Buster Posey and you got a flip phone and you got to open a laptop in order to get onto social media. Then I kind of get it. But it, for the most part, you're paying attention, especially if you're in the NBA. The NBA has more of a showing on a more representation on social media than any other sport. From the Chilton Auto Body text line at 95795 from the 415, people tend to forget that Dre was a depoy. From the 669, Draymond been and will always be overrated, and I'm a Warrior fan. From the 925, I feel Barkley's issues with the Warriors were real in the beginning, but now it's just shtick. Yeah, I'm so naive when it comes to that sort of stuff, when it comes to shticks and that and whatever. I think that Barkley, to me, seems really authentic with everything he says, and he believes the stuff that he says. I'm very gullible and naive when it comes to the shtick things. Is this just a shtick or not? That's just how I am. I don't know about you, but as long as he keeps saying this stuff, I'm going to continue to believe that he I'm going to continue to think that he truly believes in what he's saying. But hey, when you're given a Warrior game on national TV, on TNT, they got to say something about them. And it's not going to be all positive things. We weren't really all up in arms about when Shaq and Barkley were just basically roasting the team, the entire team, saying they can't even remember anybody's names. When Shaq's just like, who's Lee? Who's Lee? Is that Courtney Lee? It's like, no, that's not Courtney. It's not Courtney Lee from the 2009 Magic. That's not Courtney Lee. That's Damian Lee, Shaq. You know, and they had to correct him and all that. So we didn't come down their lane there. They've been saying this stuff for a majority of the season, and Barkley's been saying this for a long time for the past few years. It's nothing new. It's nothing new. I have a fun hypothetical to talk about next, so wait for the question. But also I want to talk about Barry Bonds and this piece that came out in The Athletic about him and how his heart is broken and that baseball has basically exiled him. So we'll get to all that next, but I want you to continue to text in on the Chilton Auto Body text line, 957-955-888-957-9570. Stick around. I'll let you know what that question is next. Stephen Langford on the pregame show, 95.7 The Game.
Now back to the pregame show on 95.7 The Game. Here's Stephen Langford.
The pregame show on 95.7 The Game is presented by Golden State Lumber. With locations across the Bay Area, we offer next day delivery. Now that's a winning game plan. That's Golden State Lumber at goldenstatelumber.com. Song's so good. Now, this Draymond and Charles Barkley thing, I personally love it. I think it's what makes the NBA, you know, even though the ratings are down and all that sort of stuff, I like that these players and these players and these analysts, they're very outspoken and they're not afraid to criticize each other. And it's, you know, you hear a lot in football and basketball about the legends talking down on the game. You see it in baseball every now and again, but it feels like the beef in the NBA is more so than in these other leagues. And you had one last week. This fact is pretty funny. This little factoid is going to it's satisfying, to say the least. But basically, since James Harden said that stuff about Giannis Antetokounmpo and said that it doesn't take much skill to be a seven-footer and do what he does, then it turns out that James Harden, ever since then, they've lost their last four games, and James Harden is only shooting just over 30% from the three-point line. So that's where the trash talking got him. But what we're talking about now is Draymond and Charles Barkley. And I want to get to my hypothetical in a second. I got a random hypothetical regarding wiffle ball. But here is the sounding question about Charles Barkley talking on Draymond Green.
He had his normal triple single.
Golden State.
Why you on him so hard?
He talk all that stuff when he got the other boys with him.
Golden State hanging in there against the Lakers, a 54-52 game. Don't encourage him.
Come on, wait. No, man. He talks all that stuff when he got them other boys with him. Once he got out there and fight for himself, he just don't want to play. Give me a break. Y'all better quit telling me who can play and who can't play. I know who can play.
And here's Draymond when asked about Barkley's comments.
Barkley should stop before I go take his job, though, so I can do that well, too. He already ain't make enough money playing, so he need that job. He should stop talking to me. I like to, you know, tendency to end people. So he should stop before I take his job. If he keep talking, then I'll take it soon, sooner than he thinks. So, yeah, he probably should be quiet. He also can't talk basketball with me either. Not smart enough, not qualified. No rings, can't sit at this table.
So good. On the Chill Nobody text line at 95795 from the 707, Draymond and Chuck on the show together would be awesome. He wouldn't have to take Charles' job. They could just add him to the show. See, this is a perfect opportunity for TNT during the playoffs when the Warriors aren't in it. When the Warriors aren't in the playoffs for the first time since, what was it, like 2011, 2012, for the first time not in the playoffs since then, and you got Draymond Green, you got to have him on the show during playoffs. Right now, we're seeing a new look on TNT. We're getting the broadcast with Adam Lefko, who's from Bleacher Report, and you got Candace Parker, and you got D. Wade, and then you got Shaq. Dwayne Wade would join those guys during the playoffs and talk basketball from time to time. They need to have Draymond Green as a guest analyst on that show during the playoffs when the Warriors aren't in and he doesn't have anything else to focus on. They need Draymond on that show. I'm coming up with ideas left and right for Draymond Green ever since his new Converse, his new sponsorship, ever since that arrived and they showed his new shoes on Twitter. I'm like, you got to put him in the old school Converse and you call him the Dr. Dre's. That's just an idea from me. Probably not a good one, but that's what the idea came into my head at the time. And now Draymond goes on to TNT during the playoffs and he joins Chuck, Shaq, Ernie Johnson, Kenny Smith. And then what Kenny Smith does, and then he aggravates both of them and gets them both to bicker and argue for however long, and then they go into the playoff coverage. I would much rather hear that than, let's just say, I don't know, analysis on Lakers and Grizzlies. Clippers and Mavericks is actually, let's just say if the season ended today, you'd have the Lakers and the Grizzlies, you'd have the Clippers and the Mavs, you'd have the Nuggets and the Rockets, and you have the Jazz and the Thunder. I would much rather hear Charles Barkley and Draymond Green argue about their season than any sort of analysis surrounding Jazz versus Thunder. I don't know about you, but to me, that doesn't garner much interest for me. I think that Clippers-Mavs series is going to be good just because Luka Doncic going up against Kawhi Leonard and Paul George. Lakers-Grizzlies, you know, Ja Morant-Grizzlies, all that sort of stuff. Good, but doesn't pique my interest that much as Clippers and Mavs does. And Nuggets-Rockets, everyone's just going to hate watch the Rockets anyway, so that series is going to be interesting regardless. But then you got Jazz and the Thunder. I'd much rather hear Draymond Green and Charles Barkley just talk about this. Hash it out. See what each other has to say. Put them in the ring. So I have this hypothetical. Chilton Autobody text line 95795. 888-957-9570. And I need your help on this one. I want to know your answers. This is a segment for you, Chilton Autobody text line 95795, even though mostly every day you are basically my co-host for the hour, but this is the one where I do want the help. So Kyle Brandt of Good Morning Football, he posted a GIF of Ken Griffey Jr. And on top of it, the caption says this: "You and your friends are playing wiffle ball. You're a little drunk. You step to the plate. Whose batting stance are you impersonating?" And he chose Ken Griffey Jr. Now, I've never been able to impersonate the Ken Griffey Jr. batting stance well. It's a tough one to get, the little waggle and with the back arm, all, and you know, you're moving your hips, you're doing that. But the swing is what, the follow through on the swing is what makes that stance, just everything about it, so pretty. That's what makes it the prettiest swing in baseball history. So he chose Ken Griffey Jr. and the responses on it are terrific. And I want to know from you on the Chilton Autobody text line at 95795 or 888-957-9570. We could take out all the other stuff, the details that he puts, but basically, if you're playing wiffle ball with your friends, whose batting stance are you impersonating? I want to know from you. Chilton Autobody text line 95795. Because for me, it's easily the Ichiro Suzuki windup combined with the Gary Sheffield. That's always what I do, and I'd crush it every single time. Pull that ball to left field as if I was Gary Sheffield. Now, I know it's just wiffle ball, and you're using one of those little plastic yellow bats, and you're just out in the backyard. You're with some friends. You're with some family, whoever. You always end up impersonating a batting stance. I want to know from you on the Chilton Autobody text line, 95795, whose batting stance do you impersonate anytime you go out there? I feel like the consensus for the prettiest swing of all time is Ken Griffey Jr. And Ken Griffey Jr. obviously has that he just looks so cool. And he started that trend of wearing backwards hats, you know, during the home run derby and the battles that he would have during those. And he was just such a young, just all-time type of player. And that swing, it feels like if you're going to impersonate one, it's always that one that looks the coolest. I would try and go with the Barry Bonds, but when you're a right-handed batter, you could try doing the Ken Griffey Jr. too when you're a right-handed batter, and you can try and get the follow-through as much as you can, but it doesn't work unless you do it left-handed. So mine just looks ugly in general when trying to do the Ken Griffey. But the Gary Sheffield, if you're a right-handed batter, the Gary Sheffield is always the one you want to go with. But I like doing the Ichiro windup, stick the bat out, then you bring it around town. You know, you do the whole 360, whatever, not even a 360. You bring it around town, point the batter at the pitcher, tug at the shoulder. Boom. You're ready to play a little wiffle ball. That's where I'm at with that. Then I do the Gary Sheffield. Chilton Autobody text line 95795. Sheesh, we are getting a lot. My goodness, 5:45 in the morning. I like this. From the 510, this is what I wouldn't be able to do right now. Went ATVing over the weekend, sore as ever. My entire left side can't use it. I'm limping right now. I need a cane. Someone grab me a cane. I need one. But I can't do the Jeff Bagwell right now because that would require some squatting. The Jeff Bagwell, no one... Is that the most intimidating batting stance of all time? When this dude just does a squat in front of you, from the right side of the box. You're a pitcher. You're looking, and the guy just strolls in, and he just does a squat. Oh, my gosh. Unbelievable. Yeah, from the 408, it was a SpongeBob reference. Yeah, I wasn't bringing it around. Yeah, I don't like to admit it, but yeah. Yeah, one of my favorite cartoons of all time, but yeah. From the 415, as a lefty, I go with Jim Tomey, point to the pitcher, then go into Barry Bonds. Barry Bonds was always a good one. From the 209, Carlos Delgado. From the 510, has to be Willie Stargell with the windmill in the batter's box. That's Juan in the Bay. From 702, Carney Lansford stance. Crouched down. That was a very 80s to 90s batting stance. Now, I wasn't born in that era, and I didn't watch baseball in that era, but I've watched plenty of highlight videos because that's all I got. But those guys I've noticed are way more bent over at the back in their stance. We're getting another Will Clark as well. Although Will Clark, although those are two different styles of hitter, Carney Lansford, one of the greatest contact hitters of all time. My neighbor was his cousin. Fun little fact. But they would crouch over and do some weird stance that doesn't look comfortable, but it would work. I kind of like that. From the 707, Daryl Strawberry. From the 415, Kevin Youkilis, because it looks ridiculous. See, if you do the Kevin Youkilis, the popular batting stance guy who would just do perfect impressions of batting stances, you should check him out. He did a set on Letterman one time. I think it was like 7 minutes long, and you learn a little bit about him. Then he just goes into doing his batting stances. A weird avenue to go down as far as getting popular on social media, but that's what happened. He would do the Kevin Youkilis, and obviously he would do the hand up at first and slide it down with every, whatever you want to call it, with every pump. And then he would have that face. He would always have that menacing face, the menacing look on his face where it's like, you don't want to mess with this dude. Always liked it. Missed the Kevin Youkilis batting stance. That's one to really take. Yeah, I like that. The 510, the kid for sure. Gary Sheffield Batwaggle was intimidating, though. Yeah. Yeah, it feels like Griffey and Sheffield are two. If you're going from the left side and you're a lefty, you probably want to go Ken Griffey. If you're from the right side, you'd want to go Gary Sheffield. Any Rod Carew fans in the house? Anyone with the little just let it hang at first and then go into your stance? Or maybe the Joe Morgan. The Joe Morgan with just a little crunched up. Man. See, and that's what bothers me about, not bothers, but you know, it's what gets me about baseball nowadays. I don't know if this is even a part of the problem. I like to think it is, but when baseball is down the way that it is, as far as popularity and people just not enjoying the game for the three true outcomes, the analytics, the stuff that's going on the field, that's part of the problem. A big part of the problem. As a matter of fact, it could be all of the problem, but I like to think that a little part of that problem, though, also that baseball has, is that these guys don't have any impressionable batting stances. There aren't many in the league where I sit there and I think I remember that guy's batting stance. You know, nothing iconic. When you think of Barry Bonds, you know, you think of him from the left side, just a couple of waggles, if that's what you want to call them. Pop, pop. Then he'd, you know, go into a swing. It was a timing thing for Barry Bonds. That's what it was all about. These guys just don't do their batting stances for no reason. They always have a reason to do them. But these ones nowadays, you know, you look at the Aaron Judges of the world, the Mike Trouts, you know, all kind of milk toast to me. I can't really think of any good batting stances going on right now, but I like to think that the fact that none of these guys have ones that are like, you know, a Ken Griffey, the Sheffield, the Julio Franco. I got a Julio Franco earlier on the text line. It's just, it takes away a little bit from it. You don't have the Craig Counsells anymore. You think Craig Counsell looks from the Milwaukee dugout, looks ahead and just thinks, do you think that... that guy could use my batting stance. That guy could lift his hands as high as he can above his head before the pitch is about to come. You think Craig Counsell ever thinks that as a Milwaukee manager? Man. Yeah, from the 510, we're getting some Craig Counsell. From the 707, Matt Williams as Babe Ruth, the best ever. Ricky Henderson with the home run swing from the 5-1-0. If you did the Ricky Henderson batting stance and you knew that one was out, that has to be the most swagger-filled home run in wiffle ball history if you need to do that. You hit it, right? Then you back out of the batter's box in a skip, and then you round first base, but you do it as wide as possible. You let the people know, like, this is, yeah, I just did that. So you gotta go around the first base coach, basically. That's what Ricky Henderson used to do. And then if you get a single, you be on first and you act like you're about to steal, then you wiggle your fingers. Kind of like your Ricky Henderson. Love that. From 5-1-0, Mark McGwire. From the 5-1-0, Sosa and Griffey. From the 6-5-0, Eric Karros. It's a nonchalant stance. And from the 4-0-8, Kevin Youkilis owns a good brewery. Yeah, isn't that in Los Gatos? From the 4-0-8, nothing iconic anymore, just stupid again. Pujols is awful, but Pence is even worse. There you go. The Albert Pujols. You got to give the Albert Pujols the pump in the back, and then you got to put both the corners of your lips up. That's the Albert Pujols special right there. Never understood that. The one who's come to mind just now in baseball nowadays, talking about you do batting stances for a reason, Matt Olson has one of the more interesting batting stances. First baseman for the A's, in case you didn't know who that is, but you should know who he is. That stance is built for a home run swing. It's not iconic necessarily, but it's just an interesting batting stance that's out of the ordinary. But you look at guys like Simeon and Chapman, who are the most popular players on the team, their batting stances, good hitters. Batting stances, I give them a D. Kind of just boring. Yeah, from the 5-1-0, Chris Davis's stance is like a calm before the storm. Yeah, he's kind of just like putting it back there, kind of waiting, just waiting for the pitch. Yeah, you don't expect a guy with Chris Davis's stance to be as powerful a hitter as he is. Probably going to hit 247 this year with 35 to 40 home runs. That's just me. From the 510 on the Chilton Autobody text line. Right now, just in case you are rolling in, I have been going on with this hypothetical without really resetting it. But on Twitter, I saw earlier this weekend, you're a little drunk. Your friends are playing wiffle ball. You don't have to be a little drunk in this hypothetical, by the way. No alcohol needed. But you're with your friends. You're playing wiffle ball. You step to the plate. Whose batting stance are you impersonating? You know what I did when I was probably 14, 15 at the time when I was playing, but I would do the Pablo Sandoval, go down to the bottom of the box, do the little cross, then go up to the top of the batting stance or go to the bottom of the box, the bottom of the batter's box, tap both feet, you know, swipe up, do that whole thing, and then I would get into the Aaron Rowand. The Aaron Rowan, one of the weirdest batting stances that I'd ever witnessed in person. Did anyone ever sit behind the plate, no matter if it was first deck or second deck, did anyone ever sit behind the plate when Aaron Rowan was in his batting stance? It's one of the strangest things ever. How is this guy, it's kind of like, think, you know, Chris Davis, think of that. But then Chris Davis just completely arches his back. Oh, that hurt. I'm sore, but completely arches his back and then also bends his legs a little bit, sticks the hips out. That'd be Aaron Rowan's batting stance. I pulled that in a game once, got a single off of it. It was weird. I didn't go with it for the rest of the time. From the 415, A-Rod's swing was nice. A-Rod, I'm just kind of going off life stories here, but when you bring up A-Rod, I immediately go to this one every time. I was in the Coliseum. I was above the suites. I was in the bleachers. They had them for super cheap one year. It was like Dollar Wednesdays it was $5 bleacher days with like dollar hot dog days. So you could go to the Coliseum with $7 and you'd be good for the day. But I was sitting in the bleachers and I was there for Yankees batting practice and I wasn't paying attention to it. I was so far up and I had my feet on the railing. So this is really high up. Way above the 400-foot sign. and A-Rod during batting practice hits one off of the railing. I was talking to my friend, and then all of a sudden a baseball hits the railing. We didn't expect that. And that ball from batting practice had to have gone over 500 feet, way over 500 feet. From the 925, the Nomar Garciaparra stance, you just got to unstrap and strap on your gloves and restrap them 6 or 7 different times on each hand just to really get into the pitcher, then tap the toes. From the 619, this is a good one. Thank you. Juan Soto has the best and most intimidating stance, especially when the pitcher throws the ball. That guy, he has two different ones too. You could tell when it depends on the count that he's in. But if he's in a count where he could stay wide and stay loose and he doesn't have to step into the pitch, he knows a fastball is going, he's all hips. So that stance at first, he's got that foot up. Yeah. Yeah, I'm with you. And from the 510, Tony Batista, how is no one mentioning him with the just standing forward, basically, with his body as if he's going to bunt? That's one that intimidates you if you're going to bunt. It's the Tony Batista batting stance. From the 707, there are only three stances you go to during wiffle ball: Sheffield, Griffey, and Ichiro. Three most iconic stances in the game's history. That's exactly what mine is. I go in there with the Ichiro windup, stick the bat at the pitcher, wind it around, stick it back there, and then flick the shoulder, flick the shirt, get it up onto your shoulder, get comfortable. I wouldn't even have to have a shirt on, and I would still flick the shoulder during the Ichiro batting stance. From the 510, Ty Cobb as well. And Ty Cobb, yeah, I remember back in those days. I remember the old Ty Cobb. But yeah, it's weird. You know, you don't see those iconic batting stances anymore. The one that the texter just mentioned from the 619, Juan Soto, I can't even think of really a better one than that. Tomorrow, want to get a little more into the Barry Bonds story because this wiffle ball hypothetical took things down a whole new road. So tomorrow I want to talk a little bit about Barry Bonds and his interview with Andrew Baggerly. That was from spring training. But coming up, Jim Leland is going to join the show with Joe Lowe and Dibs. He'll be on at 7 o'clock. Ryan McDonough, he'll join the guys at 8. He had the Bradley Beal and Andrew Wiggins trade first, and then Mike Brown, Warriors assistant coach, at 9:05. Joe Lowe and Dibs coming up next.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.